Welcome to Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network. Today, Mark talks with Greg Lavoie, best-selling author of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. Also, the beautiful and inspirational sounds of singer-songwriter Janis Stanfield. So sit back and enjoy. Here's Mark.
Hello, my friends. This is Mark Ward, and this is Prescription for Success. This is the show where we examine the intricacies of success by all definitions, exploring the insights, strategies, and wisdom necessary to create greater satisfaction and fulfillment in our lives and in the world. I'm very excited about our guest today. He is a full-time lecturer, keynote speaker, and seminar leader in business, educational, and human potential arenas. He is frequently featured as a guest on a number of programs on ABC, CNN, NPR, and PBS. He is a former adjunct professor at the University of New Mexico, a former columnist for the Cincinnati Enquirer and USA Today, and he has also written for the New York Times, Washington Post, Reader's Digest, and Psychology Today, to name just a few. He is the author of a book that I truly believe that everyone should have as a part of their collection. It is a book that offers new insights every time you read it, and believe me when I say once you read it, you will want to read it again. It has been featured as a selection of the Book of the Month Club, Quality Paperback Books, and One Spirit Book Club, and it is even used as a text in a number of graduate programs in management and organizational leadership. It is a work that I have recommended for many of my clients over the years, and I'm speaking, of course, of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life, and its author, who is our guest today, Mr. Greg Lavoie. Greg, welcome to our program today. I'm so excited to have you with us.
Great, thank you.
So let me ask you, one of the things that we speak of in this particular program all the time is this idea of success. So I wanted to ask you, how do you define success for yourself?
That's a great question. How I define it for myself? Just as a preface, I'm going to be, of course, shooting from the hip with these questions because I don't have the opportunity to think about them in the way I would normally want to think about them. So just take this with a grain of salt. This is coming off the top of my head. But my own sense of success has to do with whether I am honoring the dictates of my own integrity. And I don't mean integrity so much as a moral issue, so much as a psychological issue, whether I'm in line with what my soul is asking me to do and to be at any given moment. And this really came home to roost when I quit my job as a reporter to be a freelance writer, which was a calling that I'd had for years and years. Because one of the things, of course, that people have to encounter when they consider leaving employment for self-employment is the mindsets of being self-employed, the mindsets of discipline and self-management, and the mindsets of what constitutes success. So to me, success started to become the fact that I was a freelance writer, not whether and how successful I was as a freelancer. You know what I'm saying? So it was simply whether I was following the calling. Because I think all a call is really is just a request for a response from us. And I think that more and more I seem to feel that success is simply whether we honor the calls or not, and whether we are therefore in alignment with who we really are.
I think that's a great definition. Now, I wanted to ask you, since you're speaking of callings, and we know that the subject of callings is a large part, if not all of your work these days. So how did you come to this work? How did you find that callings was your calling? Was there an epiphany of some sort, a defining moment for you?
Oh, boy. You know, there's this Italian writer that I ran across years ago by the name of Alberto Moravia. In one of his books, he says that he thinks it's important to pursue what he called the one problem you were born to understand, which is, I think, one of the questions perhaps I passed along to you guys in the Callings Workshop in Chicago. When I think of that, when I read that and I think of the problems or the questions that I was born to respond to or to answer, that's one of mine. And as far back as I can remember, I've been fascinated by how people create a life that really belongs to them and isn't a knockoff. It's just been a fascination of mine, of perhaps coming from growing up in a family where neither one of my parents did what they wanted to do with their professional lives. And that just simply got into me. So I'm not sure that there was a singular epiphany as mm-hmm. much as a lifetime of questioning that really came to a focus when I moved from the city to the country for the first time in my life. I moved from San Francisco to outside of Taos, New Mexico. Mm. And I was born in New York, and I've lived within honking distance of cities my whole life. And this was the first time in my life that I ever lived in the country. And so what happens when you follow a call to move from the city to the country is you are taken away from all the distractions of city life. All those wonderful things, including being able to get pizza and cannoli at 2 a.m.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Chicago, of course, being one of those cities. I was taken far away from all of that and forced to contend with myself in a way I hadn't really listened to myself before. And I fought and screamed and dragged my heels the whole way. But at some point, you realize that there's a reason that there is a tradition, a spiritual tradition, of going to the desert for solitude and perspective and, dare I say, enlightenment of some sort. There's a reason that there's a tradition, because the deserts are deserts. They're not cities. Having been in the desert for 10 years, I now know why there's a tradition of people leaving the desert to go back to the city. And really, it's Joseph Campbell's thing that at some point you follow the calls, you go out to the wilderness, which I put in quotes, whatever's unfamiliar to us, and you come back to the community bearing the proverbial gifts. And in this particular case, that actually happened to be the Callings book.
Which, as I said in my introduction, is just an incredible book. I really do believe it is the most comprehensive book that I have read on this particular topic. And what I would like to ask you in regards to that is, I think there is a serious misnomer about this idea of callings, almost like, you know, Moses and the burning bush. Can you, for our listeners, describe how you define a calling?
Yeah, I think you're right. One of the notions that I think callings is sort of brined in people's minds is this notion that it refers to a religious calling, a calling to the ministry, for instance, something like that. And I'm defining it very secularly and pluralistically, really, which is a call is the urgings, the promptings, the imperatives, the pushings, the pullings that come from deep inside our own lives that essentially instruct us in how to make our own lives literally come true. So these can be passions and intuitions and dreams and body symptoms and synchronicities and books that mysteriously make their way onto your night table, if not the section of the bookstore you always go to first when you walk into a bookstore. You know what I'm saying? There are lots and lots of small calls. And I think that the small calls is really the best way to approach calls, rather than waiting for the, like you said, the burning bush. You know, the chariot streaking across the sky. Because I don't think most people get their callings in that fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I think they come in the scrawny cries approach.
It's that small, still voice, perhaps?
Yes, exactly. The still, small voice that the Bible refers to. Which, let's not make another mistake in our apprehension of what that's all about. Because still, small voices may be still and small. But for one thing, they have tremendous sticking power. You know, when I was in high school, I don't know if anybody else remembers this, I had to study a poem by an 18th century poet by the name of Francis Thompson, who wrote this poem called The Hound of Heaven. And the hound was God. And so we had to discuss why a poet would choose to refer to God as a hound dog. Well, what are hound dogs famous for? Tracking. Sniffing. And so here it is, God as hound dog. Get one whiff of us and follow us for 100 miles or 50 years. So the still small voices also, they don't stay still and small the longer we ignore them. This has been my experience as well as my observation, that they start off as polite whispers, if you will, and they tend to escalate. I'm sure people recognize this. They tend to escalate into shoves and shouts and crises. What a friend of mine refers to as the 2x4 approach to consciousness raising.
Right, sometimes you know, the kick in the behind. Right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The longer we ignore them. I don't say that by way of scaring people mm-hmm. as much as honoring the way I have experienced the road to unfold, is that callings don't give up. We give up sometimes, often I would say.
So let me ask you, for those listeners out there who cannot move to the desert, who may find themselves caught up in the busyness of their day, whatever that looks like to them,
right.
who really perhaps feel disconnected from any sense of what is theirs to do in this world,
right.
What do you suggest that people do to make themselves receptive to this calling?
Well, I would say turn on the receiver in some fashion. I was impressed by how many of the people that I interviewed for the book told me that they had some kind of practice that was really just about striking up a conversation with themselves, just as a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to turn your life upside down. You don't have to move from the city to the country or quit your job or whatever. But I think that as a baseline, again, I'm going to refer to Joseph Campbell. He said the great sacrilege in terms of the soul's integrity is what he called inadvertence, which simply means not paying attention, not being alert or awake. And I think the simplest, easiest, most expedient way to do that is simply start a daily journal,
mm-hmm.
start doing dream interpretation, join a group, men's group, women's group, spiritual group, whose members get together for the primary purpose of waking up. You know what I'm saying? A contemplative reading practice. Or something, in other words, that strikes up a conversation with the deep self and just starts listening to, well, what are my dreams telling me? What is my body telling me?
Mm-hmm.
What is my life? What are the opportunities that make themselves? What are the mistakes I continually make? What is my life asking? And to start simply noting the signs and the signals.
Well, don't you think part of it is also just being clear in your intention, like actually making it a priority? Like, what is the question for which you are seeking an answer?
Oh, yeah, well put. Yes, I do. I think having an intention to gain the clarity that you need to make the kind of moves that callings are asking us to make, whether they're in the career arena or the relationship arena or the lifestyle arena or the moral, whatever, I think having a clear sense of, I'm determined to know this information. For instance, there was a point in my life when I had lousy dream recall, and I know that science tells us we all dream, and 4 or 5 times a night, and so I was determined to not miss the information that dreams contain. So I took about a month. It took about a month for me to condition myself, and like you said, out of a sense of intention to not miss the information that dreams contain. And all the religions of the world seem to agree that dreams are one of the primary channels through which God or the gods speak to the mortals. So I don't want to sleep through them. So I set an intention that I'm going to practice dream recall. And so each night in that little half-life zone, that liminal zone between waking and sleeping, I just simply said, asked for dream guidance. Please tell me what I need to know right here. Tell me what's important. Give me some guidance. And it took a month until the dream started to come. But I had to make the promise. This is part of the intention. I had to make the promise that even if I got woken up at 2:30 in the morning when I had a meeting at 7 in the morning, I was going to wake up, turn on the flashlight, and write the dream, or better yet, tape the dream into a little tape recorder by my bedside, and then try to go back to sleep.
Now, were you able to interpret the dreams then?
Oh, well, sometimes to this day, sometimes and sometimes not. You know, dreams, they're...
Because, Greg, my dreams are freaky.
Yeah,
I don't know about
freaky.
Yours. But, yeah.
There's no doubt about it. They're weird, they're freaky, they're... Sometimes you just want to say to your unconscious, just tell me what I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Just think marquee, billboard, sandwich board, just, you know what I'm saying?
Because I know that I've actually heard people say in dream work sometimes that it's important to also make your intention the ability to interpret that which you are dreaming.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just a crazy salad and you can't make heads or tails of it. And sometimes you're tempted to go to a dream dictionary to have somebody else interpret your... And that's tricky. And I think there's some good material out there in the dream dictionary scene. But one of the things that the dream books say very consistently is water or the ocean, for instance, represents the unconscious. I see this very consistently. My concern is that water is going to mean something very different to somebody who almost drowned as a child than it is to somebody like me who's more at home in the ocean than the fish is. You know what I'm saying? So I just think it's important to be a little bit cautious about having somebody else interpret your dream.
So
the question really is, in what way does this dream image reflect something that's going on in my life now? That, to me, was the most useful question I asked of my dream.
That's a great question. Now, for those of us who battle with the illusion of perfectionism, for those of us who want to do everything right, and of course it's not me, but people that I know.
Yeah. A friend.
Yes, a friend. A friend whose name I will not mention.
That's right.
What do you suggest? How do people then, once they make this their intention, how do you recommend that people differentiate a true call from a false one?
A couple of things pop into my mind. I think ultimately the truth or the falseness of calls, and I'm thinking of just how they've unfolded or not unfolded in my own life, I think one of the best approaches is that the truth or falseness of a call comes really ultimately in the results. In other words, I have to be willing to try them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I can't just think about this while sitting in an armchair. I've got to be willing to take steps toward, in other words, if I've come to some, even a half conclusion that this arena is really calling to me, this is something that is called for in my life, a decision or an experimentation or a course correction or an awakening, right? The best thing I can do to find out whether it's really true or false is to go down that path for a way, and I mean not a couple of days or a couple of weeks, but a couple of months or a year. Commit, you know, and look at the feedback that your life gives you. Does your energy expand or contract? Do you feel more awake or more asleep? What are your friends telling you? Like, wow, Mark, I haven't seen you this excited since I met you. Or borrow this from a friend of mine, Kathy Walker, who has this life coach, who has this process called the Clarity Coaching Process. And she calls this thing lights on. And you videotape yourself talking about some of the things that you think are calling to you at the moment. And you have a friend interview you on camera, close shot, tight shot, you know, head and shoulders, and then you watch this video with friends Friday night, make popcorn, and let them tell you what they see. Because it's brilliant, because you can see in parts per million the subtle shifts of expression and gesture and eyes open, eyes closed. You can see it in your face so readily how you actually feel about some of the different things that you think are calling to you.
Now, that's fascinating, because I was going to ask you if you believe that your feelings are really the gauge for whether you're on the, quote, right track, but it sounds as if it's actually a lot more than that.
Well, it's tricky, too. I mean, you know, I think most of us know this, is sometimes how do you discern intuition from fear? You know, how do you pull this stuff apart? I'm split enough between my emotional life and my intellectual life that it's tricky for me to just absolutely trust one or the other. So this is one of the reasons why I think it takes some time to really submit the evidence that you're getting from dreams, body, readings, group work, whatever. You submit all that evidence to the adjudication of the mind, the emotions, the psyche, the spirit, the body, and maybe even ask your friends what they think.
And to also know, I think, that it may not happen in 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Right. Well, I want to speak to you about some of the fears that people typically face when they're following a calling. So I want to do that after the break.
Alrighty.
So let's take a break, and we'll be right back with Greg Lavoie, the author of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. We'll be right back.
What would I do if I knew that I could not fail? If I believed, would the wind always fill up my sail? How far would I go? What could I achieve? Trusting the hero in me. If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge, where fools and dreamers dare to tread, and never lose faith, even when losing my way. What step would I take today if I were brave? What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream? What would you ask if you knew you could have anything? Like the mighty oak sleeps in the heart of a seed, are there miracles in you and me? If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge, where fools and dreamers dare to tread, and never lose faith, even when losing my way. What step would I take today if I were brave? The voice of courage whisper in my ear. If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge, where fools and dreamers dare to tread, and never lose faith, even when losing my way. What step would I take today if I were
Welcome back. We are here with Greg Lavoie, the author of Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. And Greg, before the break, we started speaking about, or at least crossing the bridge to speaking about, some of the fears that people might face when following a calling. And I think this is one of the things that I appreciated so much about your book and that I appreciate about your work is, you know, we hear the whole follow your bliss kind of thing. And I believe that it sort of minimizes the power of the calling to believe that it's automatically, you know, once you find it, you're skipping through the tulips.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you would speak to some of the fears that people face in following a calling or even ignoring one.
Right, yeah. I appreciate you giving a tip of the hat to that skipping through the tulip scenario, because I do see that a lot in the work that I do, is that people have the anticipation that once they finally, perhaps finally, say yes to their deepest passions or dreams or sense of purpose in the world, that all the doors will swing open and that, you know, bluebirds of happiness will, et cetera,
harps, right? And choirs of angels.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And this is especially true in what I will advisedly refer to as the New Age movement, because there's a sense of this sort of how the manifestational processes work, meaning that if you leap, the net will appear. Now, I think there's a lot of truth in as you thinketh, and a lot of truth into setting intentions and whatnot, but I have also seen people leap and go splat. And so I just want to offer a generous bow to the forces that are out of our control in this universe, of which there are perhaps nauseatingly many.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to offer a bow to that, because those forces are at work whether we set intentions and affirmations and meditations or not. So, some of the fears that people do encounter, I think maybe especially is the fear of what the calling is ultimately going to demand of them, what price it's going to exact, you know, what they're going to have to give up to follow it. And you alluded to Campbell's admonition to follow your bliss, which has sort of become like bumper sticker theology for people, believing that by following their bliss, their lives are going to be blissful. And Campbell was pretty clear on that point. He said, if you follow your bliss, you will have your bliss. In other words, if I quit my job to be a freelance writer, I will be a freelance writer, right? And I will be free, in this case, of employment and all that that implies for doing what somebody else wants you to do. I will be free. I will have my bliss.
And there's an and with that.
Oh, there certainly is. And in my case, the and was, I'm going to go ripping through my savings account. I'm going to miss the water cooler scene at work and have to find ways of being back in community. I'm going to have to work an average of 10 to 15 hours a week longer, if not harder, than the employed statistically, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so what are you willing to do to follow the call and be in integrity with yourself? Because there'll be times that are wonderfully delicious and there'll be times that are incredibly hard, and you will be full of doubt and you will grind to a halt and you will think, I better get back to a job while I still can. And all of that is part of the call. I mean, there's a reason Campbell referred to it as the road of trials. And a wonderful word that I ran across that I think really sums up what actually happens when you say yes to a call, heart breakthrough. One word.
Heart breakthrough.
One word.
Mm-hmm.
Captures it all. Heartbreak and breakthrough. And I think that it's really the better part of wisdom and valor to anticipate both of them when you follow calls and really make some room in your anticipations for, you know, the poop hitting the propeller. You know, because that's part of honoring callings. It's not about, I don't actually believe it's about happiness. I don't think that God or the soul, if you will, cares about my happiness and my security and my vanity and my popularity. I think what matters is saying yes. What matters is honoring the call to integrity and to service and to love of your humanity and other people's humanity and the gifts that you came into this world bearing, and will go off into kingdom come with a limp if you don't honor them. You know,
wow, that's powerful.
Well, thank you. I feel strongly about that.
So one of the questions I know that I ask my clients or potential clients really is the pain and discomfort of where you are greater than the pain and discomfort of what it's going to take to move you out of it?
Oh, that's great.
So I'm wondering if what your experience has been of the consequences of people who ignore the call.
You know, that scenario you just painted there, beautifully painted, I would add, is actually part of the blessing, because when you get to the point when the fear of following a call is exceeded by the pain of not following it, actually that's a good place to be, because that is often the quality of desperation it takes for people to honor calls and to make what sometimes turns out to be pretty radical change. So, I mean, and that has certainly happened to me. When the pain, for instance, of staying at my job at the newspaper started to exceed the fear I had of what would be involved in freelancing, that's when I started to really make plans to leave.
It's part of the awakening.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the only way people will change is by being forced into it, you know? And in a sense, thank goodness for that mechanism. Otherwise, we would hang on to the status quo indefinitely and overripen and rot on the vine. You remember, who's that comedian? Red Fox.
Mm-hmm.
He once said something I thought was very astute about people's tendency to avoid change, except at gunpoint. He said, heroes are not born, they're cornered.
And that's great.
I just think there's a lot of truth in that. We are often forced into, quote, heroic acts by our own circumstances, our own sufferings.
Well, one of the things, too, that I think is a misnomer, for lack of a better term, amongst many people out there, is believing that the calling also has to be the profession. And the argument out there is someone has to bust the tables. I mean, it may not be, you know, it may not be their passion, but it can certainly feed them while they're exploring their passion. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit to that as well.
You know, it's interesting. I was at a workshop in Oregon some years ago, and a man stood up and said something similar to what you said. He said, wait a minute, if everybody follows their callings, nobody's going to be around to pick up the trash. And while I was trying to think of a response to that, a woman shot up out of her seat in the back of the room and contested this. She said, I want you to know that one of my son's dream, ever since he was young, was to be the manager of a fast food restaurant. He wanted to own one of those franchise stores. And so your idea that if everybody follows their calling, there's not going to be anybody to work in fast food restaurants flipping hamburgers is arrogant. That was what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us were sort of abashed when she said that, because I think a lot of us, myself included, have this idea that nobody dreams that small.
Right.
So that isn't necessarily the case. And also what you said, I think, is true, is that all of us at some point, I think, have to find, or many of us have to find ways of, as it were, creatively biding our time, you know, while we're waiting for something else to unfold, or being actively patient. Because some of the things we're referring to in this conversation, some of the calls we're referring to, are big ones. They're not little ones.
Right.
Like following an intuition in a moment. They're bigger ones, like career changes and relationship changes. And some of those require patience on the order of years. And that's one of the other things that callings will often demand of us, is patience on the order of years for these things to unfold, for us to get the skills we need, the contacts, the confidence. You know what I'm saying? And I just think that sometimes you have to be willing to, say, stick with a job or go do 4 years of advanced training, that you'd rather just jump into the job market, but you're not going to swim, you're going to sink if you do it that way, you know?
I do know, both intellectually and from personal experience,
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry to say.
Oh.
Yes. I do want to ask you, as we are wrapping up, and believe me, we could speak to you for hours, Greg, and if you didn't have a life, we might do it. But out of respect for you, we'll try to wrap it up here.
Right.
So if you had one piece of wisdom to share with the world, now here's a question for the gut. What would that be?
Wow. One piece of wisdom to share with the world. I would say it would be about honoring the gifts that you came in with. Don't let them go to waste. Don't let them fall by the wayside. Act on them. Bring them to life. Even if it's not big and exalted and it's not going to change the world, it's, you know, each one of us comes in with gifts, spiritual, creative gifts, emotional gifts. And I think the advice for me would just simply be the same advice I've been telling myself for my whole life, which is say yes, sing loud, do it sooner rather than later.
Would you like to sing us out, Greg?
No way.
a little Uniradio karaoke.
That was metaphoric.
It'll be okay. Well, Greg Lavoie, I cannot thank you enough. Your work has been instrumental in my life as well as my work. So, on behalf of myself and my clients and our listeners who are already familiar with you and those who are about to discover you, we say thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
And the book for the listeners, this is one that you must go out and get, is again, Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life. And its author, who is our guest today, is Mr. Greg Lavoie. And Greg, how can people contact you should they wish to send you an email or find out what's going on with you?
Yeah, well, world headquarters in this cyber age would be greglavoie.com, GREGGLEVOI.
GregLavoie.com.
Righto.
Well, again, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Mark.
And come to Chicago very, very soon.
Oh, I hope so.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
All right.
This has been Prescription for Success. I'm Mark Ward. Thank you so much for listening. Please take the time to check out the other programs on Uniradio and to watch UniTV. These programs are made available through your generosity and support. If you have any interest in sponsoring our programs, please contact us. You can send me an email at mark@unitychicago.org.
Thanks for listening to Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network. Thanks also to webmasters Jim Nagley and Bruce Laurie. Engineering and voiceover by Bruce Laurie. The opinions and views expressed by the host and guests of this program may not be those of the Unity Movement or Unity in Chicago. Please send questions or comments to mark@unitychicago.org. And we invite you to return next time for Prescription for Success with Mark Ward on the Uniradio Network.